All right, moving right along, Wayne Pacina, current vice president of the SBE and very soon to be the next president, will talk to us about networking for ATSC 3.0. Wayne.
Well, good morning, and thank you for an opportunity to be a part of the Broadcasters Clinic this year, and also talk with you today about the networking side of ATSC 3. With that, for our scope or the presentation agenda, I won't bore you with that, but specifically look at the topics that I hope to cover today, kind of a brief outline. And the big question I really want to pose is ATSC 3 special? And I think that answer, well, we'll get to that in a moment. So with that, just a little bit of introductory information about ATSC 3, why it might be important. This is somewhat like preaching to the choir with this audience, so I'll make this really brief. But I think we can thank Dr. Rich Charnock, who was integral in the development of the ATSC 3 standard that I think pretty eloquently expressed the advantages of ATSC 3 for us. You know, features that come about ranging from high definition or ultra high definition video, enhanced frame rate, enhanced color gamut and all, and of course immersive audio is, you know, some of the advantages that you see put forth. A key though is the use of the Internet Protocol or IP as the transport platform. And this is really a primary enabler that allows the implementation of many of our advanced applications. Certainly emergency alerting, enhanced emergency alerting is one of those features. But also when you think about the integration of broadband internet with that, enables interactive applications that can come available to us. So this is really kind of the key part we want to focus on today, really, is that use of the Internet Protocol or IP in that infrastructure as our key enabler. So another, I think, unique feature of ATSC 3 is the concept of a PLP or a physical layer pipe, where services can be one, bundled, and also designed for a specific application. Pretty common example you hear is, let's say, the delivery of ultra high definition video. That video, generally in that environment, large screen display, is assumed that that might be a fixed location. As a result, that delivery pipe does not necessarily need to be as robust, let's say, as another PLP that is designed to deliver to a handheld mobile device, which often would be certainly less data rate, but also need more robustness to actually achieve that delivery, beyond simply the use of OFDM modulation. So with that is the concept of a mod cod, where you can customize combinations of the modulation, the coding, and the interleaving to create, again, this customized delivery pipe. And of course, within each pipe, there can be multiple services. The famous Shannon curve is often used to illustrate this, where again, you'll see that all of these sort of standardized modulation comments, they simply follow that curve in which, again, services can be delivered. In looking at the standards, of course, we have a family of standards that have been developed by the ATSC 3, by ATSC3. With that, I think this building illustration was a unique one. The way they illustrated as these standards were developed and built. With that, though, a key part, recall, of the advantages of ATSC3, use of the internet protocol and integration with the terrestrial internet. So as a result, we also have a family of networking standards that need to come in play. One, of course, is that of the Ethernet standard that our networks are going to be built upon. That standard, of course, is a family of standards as well that is governed by the IEEE. We also have, of course, the IP standards, and the IETF, or the Internet Engineering Task Force, is simply the Bible of the IP networking industry that defines the aspects of IP networking. We also have models that are often used. And one, of course, is the legacy, as sometimes it's described. I like to use the word the classic OSI model, or the Open Systems Interconnection model, that defines how a host device communicates with another host device across the network. Particularly, the first four layers of that model are of interest to us, because that's really defined the actual networking aspect. By those first four layers. If we take now and begin to put the models together, let's say across our different areas of technology, we begin with our OSI model. Also, it's, I think, important to at least recognize there's a couple of other similar models that have evolved since the OSI model. One is the TCP model. Again, similar in concept, but simplified, as well as the DoD model, which you can imagine where that specific model came from. And it looks virtually identical, right, to the TCP model, but a slight difference in terminology. And of course, now we also have the ATSC3 model, are sometimes referred to as the protocol stack. And when we combine those, again, a common area is the use of the Internet protocol across all of those. If we look specifically at the ATSC3 protocol stack, it is a little more complicated than the previous slide. But at the same time, it really is can be fairly simplified if you kind of divide it in half, so to speak. Particularly those lower layers associated with the data flow aspect. One side is specific to over-the-air broadcast of ATSC3. The other is specific to the terrestrial use or the integration of terrestrial internet. And of course, at the very top, at the applications layer, this is where we find, in our case, the applications that would actually display content, for instance, or display information from some type of interactive application, or in the case maybe of that enhanced emergency alerting, that information that is desired. They are certainly, I'm sure many of you have seen some of the published, what I'll refer to as reference models within the industry. This is one particular one from the NAB pilot program that is pretty commonplace. And it's also that familiar kind of block or flow diagram that as broadcast engineers we're accustomed to seeing to understand a system. Again, conceptual in nature, but also functional as well. Although it's not necessary that diagram that we might build a station. So I've attempted to build us a station today. And the key is, again, the use of the internet protocol and interconnection of the parts. So this is my simplified ATSC 3 station that we'd like to build. Certainly we have a studio environment with some encoding and some packaging and some signaling devices. We have some type of STL. Note that is a IP-based STL. It might be microwave radio. It might be some type of fiber service that interconnects that studio to the transmitter. And then finally, we have our ATSC transmitter. A more practical way might be to look at that is we may have, or we will have, some additional equipment. Certainly the key is to build the network, the IP network that supports that infrastructure. And maybe we have redundant STL paths. Let's face it, broadcast engineers are belt and suspender guys, right? We like redundant paths or backup paths. In addition, think about our, from a practical standpoint, there most likely are some other devices we might find at our transmitter plant. We might want simply some security cameras. Surely we might want an access point so our mobile devices are work. Maybe a voice over IP desk set to our corporate network. And of course, that list of IP-enabled devices can go on and on. But again, it's some additional network devices that we have. So how do we go about building this? Well, one of the things that we want to look at is to accommodate these devices, and they all work. And with that, we'll use the concept of VLANs, or virtual local area networks, between our studio and our transmitter environment. And in just a minute, we'll look at why specifically we might want to build a network in that fashion. So here is my question to pose to you today. Is ATSC 3 special? And I think the answer to that, we can all answer that question. It's like many of the questions that we're all posed to us on probably a daily basis. But we want to answer this from the networking side of house. And what is that answer? Well, it depends. But what does it depend upon? Well, one might be the context that you're asking that question to, or the audience. Those of you that may be involved in a ATSC 3 build, one of the trial projects around, I think it's pretty safe to say you would say ATSC 3 is very very special, because I have been on the bleeding edge of technology and I've put a lot of sweat equity into implementing some of the trial systems. If that context is someone that has built, let's say, what I'll call the typical corporate business networks, you might say, yes, ATSC 3 is special, again, from a networking standpoint. But at the same time, if you've built those networks that are designed to accommodate real-time media type traffic, such as audio over IP, video over IP, voice over IP type networks that are focused upon delivering a certain quality of service or performance, your answer most likely is no, ATSC is really not special. And that's really the point I want to make. It is special in a certain context, but at the same time, it's not. Thus, it depends. So with that, how do we go about and actually look at some of the requirements? Well, we need to focus upon performance, because the packets involved in those PLP pipes through our ATSC 3 system, they have a certain performance requirement, or a quality of service that we want to talk about. That quality of service, again, we'll talk about those in detail, but we also, whereas it's not related to performance, we want to keep that ATSC 3 network working. We cannot build a network today without talking about cybersecurity. It's just simply a fact of life. And with that, certainly later today, there is a panel discussion on cybersecurity, so I won't get too deep there. But kind of the goals of any, I think, IT security, whether it is focused on the network or whatever, is really centered around what is often referred to as the CIE triad. And that is confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Kind of the three aspects that we strive to achieve. The CIA triad has, or the acronym CIA, has nothing to do with a specific government agency, okay? And as a result, sometimes you'll see the same concept referred to as the AIC triad, simply to avoid that confusion. So yes, we want to build a network focused on performance. We also want to keep cybersecurity needs up front rather than letting cybersecurity be an afterthought, which is often what has happened in our industry. But to build this network for performance, how do we do that? Well, one concept that I like to use the illustration of the onion network. What we want to do is build a layered infrastructure, which gives us some performance advantages, but it also is a way to accommodate security needs all at the same time. This concept of a layered network, just like you might peel the layers off of an onion, we'll find many other names, the segmented network, a layered network. If you've drink the Cisco Kool-Aid on a regular basis, you'll find a term, defense in depth, that they use to describe this multi-layered or segmented type environment. So from a conceptual standpoint, that's simply what we want to do. So how do we do that? Well, again, we need to focus upon our quality of service factors. Certainly the key ones that generally come into mind in that discussion, such things as jitter, latency. We also have some fundamental requirements of we have to have adequate bandwidth to suit our applications, or throughput. You also might see a term used as good put. In other words, we want to think about the payload capacity of our network. Certainly when we get into networks with diverse paths or redundant paths, packet order becomes a concern to us. And obviously errors are always detrimental. So those want to be minimized, maybe even eliminated. And we'll look at some of the ways in which that is done. But again, get that core quality of service is really what we're looking for. And really, this is no different than you would use the same discussion if this was focused on building a voice over IP network or an audio over IP network. Some of these same needs or requirements are there. We also, when we're dealing particularly, let's think about back to our basic network diagram or scenario where we're using some type of fiber service. Yes, that could be dark fiber, but more than likely that's going to be a service that you're going to obtain from some carrier, for instance. Carriers are also big into quality of service, and you're going to buy different service levels from a marketing standpoint. Many of the metro Ethernet offerings provided by carriers will have such things as bronze level service, gold level service, maybe platinum level. And you dig down into the fine print of that SLA or service level agreement contract that you might sign, and you'll find quality of service parameters defined, such as the maximum jitter and packet loss and those type of factors. In terms of actually building the network, there's really two, I think, concepts that I think it's important to keep in mind. One is that is of a collision domain and a broadcast domain. And these are two of the factors that really govern a lot to do with IP network performance. A collision domain, we simply want to minimize that to one host device and one switch port. That way there is no contention for any of the bandwidth between our switch port and our host device. That host device obviously might, in our case of our ATSC3 station, that could be an encoder, that might be the input, let's say, to our STL radio, or maybe the input to the transmitter at the other end, but there's no contention with that bandwidth. Also, the concept of a broadcast domain is simply how far that a broadcast can travel. And it is really surprising, just a few hosts on a network can generate a lot of broadcast traffic. So the idea of a broadcast domain is you minimize that. In other words, do not let those broadcasts travel any further than they really need to. And with that, we're going to use kind of our standard network tools and to implement, where that being an Ethernet switch or an IP router. So how do we now actually begin to build this network? And a approach that I'd like to suggest to you is we simply go back to our legacy, our traditional OSI model, particularly the data flow layers, and use that model as kind of our structured guidebook to build our network. And of course, we'll begin with the physical layer. And that one is really pretty simple. That today, I think we can safely assume that physical layer medium is going to be Ethernet. Certainly, it's important to recognize I've used an icon, obviously, for a twisted pair cable, but Ethernet comes in many, many flavors. In fact, one of the challenges that we have with Ethernet, it comes in a lot of flavors. So this is my eye chart of the day, not necessarily meant for you to read, but to maybe illustrate the possible combinations of Ethernet that exist in the marketplace, or the types of Ethernet. Now granted, some of these are legacy, they're really no longer used, but they're still a valid type. But from a manufacturer standpoint, how in the world do we build equipment that can accommodate this? We can also take that list and narrow it down a little bit more. In fact, can even further narrow it down to, you know, a small subset of types, but still, that's several different types for a manufacturer to address. How do you build equipment with the right interface for what I need in my network environment? If you haven't encountered already, you will find that the way in which that is done is through the use of an SFP transceiver, or a small form packaged transceiver that is specifically designed for a specific Ethernet type with a universal interface to a piece of equipment. So a manufacturer, whether that might be an HEVC encoder that we might use in our ATSC3 environment, or a Ethernet switch, that device simply has transceiver slots, then we as the user choose an appropriate transceiver to accommodate the specific Ethernet type, whether that be fiber or, of course, twisted pair as well. And I do want to point out there's two types of transceivers that are out there. In the context today, we're talking about the data transceivers, or those on the left. Be aware there's also transceivers that are generically referred to as SDI transceivers that we might use in building, let's say, a SMPTE 2110 IP-based plant. Similar in concept, but different in interfacing and so forth. So again, just want to make that distinction so we keep those two types separate. Well, at the data link layer, as we move up again that OSI model, We want to focus, really, this is the core of building our network, and that is the Ethernet switching environment, where, again, at that layer, we're dealing with frames that are basically switched or forwarded by an Ethernet switch. Ethernet switches, of course, come in all kinds of flavors and sizes and environments and so forth. Even the $29.95 Walmart special share some common attributes. And those are, they learn frames, they forward frames, in some cases maybe flood frames. But in the context of our network, we really want to use what is often or generically referred to as a managed switch. And that managed switch gives us the additional capabilities that are needed to implement some of the QoS factors and other services that our ATSC3 network. So when we talk about Ethernet switches, we really want to assume that we're talking about a managed Ethernet switch, again, that has the additional services and the additional features, such as the ability to support VLANs, the ability to implement security features such as port security, the ability to accommodate multicast, and again, within that ATSC3 network. Of course, again, being a layer two, the protocol data unit is the Ethernet frame. There are several frame types that exist has existed in the industry, but today the Ethernet 2 are often sometimes referred to as the DICS frame format, with the acronym DICS standing for Digital Equipment, Intel, and Xerox. Some familiar names, which of course are not necessarily still with us today. But again, they define this format of the frame that is exchanged between these switches. And we'll come back to this in just a moment when we begin to implement VLANs. One kind of, not to take us too far off topic, but a comment about MAC addresses or media access control addresses. A key, obviously, in that frame is the MAC addresses, source and destinations. That address is a 48-bit hexadecimal address. You will find that address, however, expressed in several different formats by different equipment manufacturers. The, what I'll say, the standard accepted way is by those 48 hexadecimal digits being grouped into 6 bytes and separated by a colon. But you might see other combinations used by other manufacturers. Regardless of the format that is used to express, keep in mind it is still a 48-bit address, and that address is really split in half, with the first 3 bytes representing the OUI, or the Organizational Unit Identifier, which is generally tied to a specific manufacturer, and the remaining 3 bytes a serialized address for that particular interface. And of course, a broadcast address is basically all ones, or in this example, all FFs expressed, of course, in hexadecimal. Again, I'd mentioned VLANs is a key component that we want to use. VLANs are simply a way to share a common physical networking infrastructure with multiple individual isolated networks that are built. So an example of our transmitter plant, we all have a VLAN for the ATSC3 transport. We might want a different VLAN for our security cameras, a different one for our voice over IP desk set, and so forth and so on. That provides, helps us to achieve our performance. It also provides this segmented network from a security standpoint as well. And one important thing to keep in mind about a VLAN, it is an isolated network. What happens within that VLAN stays within that VLAN. okay, even if there is a shared network infrastructure. So a real simple example, three Ethernet switches, in this case, built three VLANs across them. Again, we have three isolated networks. So what we've done is created small broadcast domains. So for instance, the host devices in the red VLAN of this example, they're only going to see the broadcast from those two devices. No interoperability whatsoever between those individual networks. How do we implement VLANs? Well, we need to go back and look at our Ethernet frame. And with that, we're going to modify that frame. We're going to tag it. In this case, the example, we're going to use an 802.1Q tag. And from that nomenclature, that says, oh, okay, 802.1, that's an Ethernet standardized tagging format, okay? And we're going to simply insert that tag within the frame. Of course, now we're modifying what? That Ethernet frame, so we have to calculate and replace with a new CRC value because we've what? We've increased the length of that frame. A little bit more detail in looking at the tag, and also I might mention they are proprietary tagging formats. Again, we're going to use a standards-based scheme, and also there can be double and even triple tagging that occurs, which is quite common, particularly back to our STL example, where we're going to utilize maybe a carrier-based service. We're going to find double and, again, maybe triple tagging. Particularly looking at, again, the details of that tag, certainly there are some bits allocated to the VLAN identifier. But more importantly, there are some bits allocated to a priority. So in a network design for performance, we can give priority to certain frames that are associated with a prioritized VLAN, and which is, again, commonly done. And of course, to implement that, the frames are tagged between the switches. And the tag is inserted and removed between the VLANs interconnected between the switches. We also want to look at, again, the concept of redundancy. We have to create a design because there only can be one connection between an Ethernet switch. But again, in our example, we want redundant paths. So part of a function of a managed switch is some of the features. One of those features is implementation or support of the spanning tree protocol, which allows basically redundant paths, an algorithm or within the switch that selects only one of those and virtually disconnects the other link. And of course, programming will allow you to prioritize what might be the primary link in the case of our STL example and so forth. So another feature we need. We also need to support multicast for that ATSC3 environment, just like we might support multicast in our Wheatnet audio over IP network or our Livewire audio over IP network. Again, a feature of a managed switch. It might be an optional feature depending upon a managed factor's marketing plan and so forth, because a switch has to basically have the right software to recognize and support multicast. Generally will be more expensive because that switch is going to have more memory and maybe more processor as well. As we quickly move up the OSI model to the network layer, this is where the router comes into play. In a small network that I illustrated, there really is no routing shown, may not need to be any routing, but if we think back to those three VLANs, the red, blue, and the green one, if there were needed any operability, this is where a router would come into play. Often there is a a term you might see as router on a stick. This is a pretty common type approach where you have multiple VLANs built across an internet switch, and then you do need some interoperability, so you have to have a router to provide that interoperability. Again, we have to keep cybersecurity things in mind. It sounds kind of counterproductive. We're going to separate or segment these different services. Now we're going to put them all back together at the layer 3 level, which is essentially what we've done. But we also then might implement other features such as access control list and firewalls to control that interoperability. You also might run into the marketing terminology of a layer 3 switch, which if you go back and think about the OSI model, switching occurs at layer 2. Well, IP routing occurs at layer 3. So there's a little bit of contradiction here, but again, a marketing term that is quite popular. And it's simply a single box solution that combines layer 2 switching with layer 3 routing. Again, we have to keep cybersecurity in mind. The ATSC3 standard has accommodated within the transmission path security using what I will call standard networking techniques and protocols. But within the infrastructure we build, we also want to keep in mind security. Again, we're going to use techniques such as switch port security. At layer 2, we're going to use some type of packet filtering. At layer 3, that simply could be an access control list. That may be a firewall, again, to implement or control that access. At the same time, remember that CIA triad that we want to keep in mind far as our what we hope to achieve. IP or the internet protocol is not secure, but there are times when we do need to secure it, and through that we use IP security, which is commonplace, particularly when we're dealing with access through the public internet. We want to use some type of tunneled or maybe a virtual private network to do that. IP security is one way in which to do that. And simply it's a matter of selecting how much of that IP packet we want to encrypt. There's generally two modes in which are used. And really the main difference is how much of that IP packet. Maybe we're going to encrypt the whole thing, but then we have to put a new header on that, a layer 3 header, so that that packet can be properly routed and so forth. So to kind of bring things to a close, some thoughts simply. ATSC3 may be special in some context, in others it is not, but we do want to keep quality of service factors in mind. Again, we want to keep in mind cybersecurity. Do not let that be an afterthought in your network designs and so forth. The other aspect that we really haven't got to in the ATSC3 world is this integration or this terrestrial integration, and that's what's coming. The home environment. And I think this is one of the areas we'll probably see one of the biggest challenges come forth. So there is more to come. There is more to be worked on because the home environment will be, I think, potentially, when you think about integration of terrestrial and over-the-air broadcasting in a media environment in the home. So with that, to begin to wrap up in the last few minutes here, again, there is certainly a lot more to learn. The ATSC3 standards are our primary reference today. Unfortunately, as an industry, we don't have the ATSC3 for Dummies textbook yet, so the standards become quite important to us. allow me to put my SBE hat on for a moment. I don't have my cap, but I do have my shirt on here, so there is more to learn. This particular presentation of 30 or 40 minutes, let's say, and 40 slides is really a subset of about 4.5 hours of lecture and about 180 slides that you'll see represented by these three webinars here that are available on the SBE website. And of course, if you have the Member Plus option, these are all available free to you. In addition, there are several other webinars regarding ATSC 3 as a system. There are several videos that came from the SBE TechCon workshop at NAB earlier this year. Those have been, whereas they're video presentations, they're under the umbrella of a webinar. Those are also available on the website today. And with that, I thank you for your time today. I welcome questions in our available time that remain. Also, some contact information for me as well. Welcome questions anytime. Thank you, everyone.